Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free. Or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, this is the audio version of the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. You can watch the video version and take part in a future episode by going to patreon.com/cultaholic.
It's showtime, folks!
This is where the big boys play, huh?
Woo! And look at Goldberg! He's ready! Oh, hell yeah!
It's gonna be the biggest battleground in the history of our sport.
Is the Cultaholic Classic Nitro Review. We are back in the halcyon days of the mid-90s with not only myself, former Cultaholic Heavyweight Champion Tom Campbell, I am with reigning WCW, resident WCW kid, Sam Driver.
And let's just say former multiple-time Cultaholic Champion. Don't you ever put yourself ahead of me again in that respect.
Putting me over like Rover, brother.
Yeah, How many times have you been Cultaholic Champion?
I couldn't tell you, but I had a very long reign at one point.
How long?
I couldn't tell you. It's all online.
It's all there. I'm sure some historian is keeping track of all the reigns. I am worried about this show that we do, Sam Driver.
Why?
I am worried, right?
Why?
I'll tell you why I'm worried. It's not because it's you.
Okay.
I enjoy every opportunity I get to spend time with you.
Well, you bloody better.
I do, mate. It's a gift. Every day's a gift. But I know you are the resident WCW kid in our place. And I'm worried that this is turning you off WCW.
Oh, not at all. Like it is like part of the beauty of it is that it's a total crap fest for a while.
Yes.
And then it inexplicably becomes the coolest thing on TV. And then it just fades away into insanity. The candle that burns twice as bright burns half as long, except it was maybe like 50 times as bright. And it has that tiny little run and that's it.
You know the film The
Short... There's a hell of a lot of great WCW before this, though.
There is.
Of a lot.
Oh, absolutely.
But,
yeah.
You know, we're coming out the worst period the industry's ever seen right now. So this is some primo WCW poo.
You know The Shawshank Redemption?
Yeah.
You know when Andy Dufresne goes through the sewers?
Crawls through a mile of shit.
That's it.
Emerges clean on the other side.
Because he lands in that lake at the other side and he's washed clean, mm-hmm. right? I feel like we're in we're halfway through the miles of shit.
We've reached like that big underground fat ball that's in the sewers of London.
Yes.
That's where we are. We're just kind of gently poking it with a stick because we don't want to touch it. We can just burrow a hole through it. There's something magnificent on the other side, but there's just a big fat ball in the way.
Meanwhile, the sergeant major of the prison has thrown a stone through that picture of Carol Vorderman.
Yeah.
And realised that it bounces all the way back.
Yeah, but not before sticking his whole hand through it first. Just like, oh my God, what? What? And then he's up to his shoulder. What? How far does this go?
Head in. What? That's the best reveal in a film,
he
I think.
Starts climbing so into good. The poster.
But then the thing is, I think, as you described so beautifully there, I feel like our Andy Dufresne is about to land in the river, be washed clean by the waters, and then climb through another tunnel of shit.
Yeah, it's like he's popped up a mile early.
Yeah.
Oh, there's still some searchlights. He's like, oh, shit.
Back in the tunnel.
Get back down. Get back down.
So we're going to continue our journey through there. But first of all, how are you doing?
Yeah, I'm grand, mate.
Yeah.
I'm grand.
How are the tattoos? Are they healing nicely?
Yeah, they're all healing fine.
Yeah. Nice. Have you booked any more since?
No, I'm trying to space it out because otherwise I'll just be too full too quick. Like, I already know what I want next. So I don't know when it's going to be, but it's going to be a while off yet. But I want King Diamond on the back of my right calf.
Because
King Diamond is the greatest. Nice. He's just the greatest. He is the greatest. He's like the most metal, the most cheesy, the most every... King Diamond is everything. He is everything. And he was a member of Mercyful Fate. So it's just, oh my God.
He's all the best things.
He is, yeah. And he's got the face paint and the funny facial expressions. And if you go back far enough, he's got the cape. It's fantastic.
He is all the best things.
Well, Mercyful Fate did their first gig in like over a decade, maybe a bit longer, not too long ago. And he just came out in like a black wedding dress. And it was like, oh, King Diamond, you old dog. Fucking kill it. Go on.
And he did.
Yeah, he still hits all of the insanely high notes. It's like, you must have heard like Rob Halford from Judas Priest, right?
Yes.
Like super high. Like that's King Diamond. He's that kind of very big, operatic, ridiculous, over the top, like wizards and witches and sorcery. And, you know, he's just fantastic.
There needs to be more music like that, man.
Yeah, it's like really self-aware, but at the same time, it's because of when it came about, it was massively pioneering, and it's like bizarre because it's so over the top, but it's like, it's just the greatest.
It's quite the journey. And I'm glad. So is it like a full-time comeback then, or is it just like a one-off?
I think Mercyful Fate will probably do an album or something, and then they'll disappear back off into the ether. But King Diamond never really went away. He just kind of comes and goes.
It's someone says his name three times in the mirror.
I wish. He'd be at my house all the time hanging out against his will.
Is the move going all right?
Yeah, that's the... So I'm like feeling a bit better because I've managed to get loads of the boxes upstairs, get them started sorting through them all. Everything's like starting to smooth out a bit because Christ, it's that initial move phase when like you don't have a big shop in. So I've got my big shop in now, but you don't have a big shop in. So you're just eating crap. And then you just end up staying up super late. You fall asleep on the couch and there's just boxes of crap everywhere. And the floor's just covered. And it's been through that phase now. Now getting into the tidying phase and everything's going to be fine soon. I just need to find somewhere to stick my pachinko machine. And then I need to choose which room I'm going to stream in. And then I'm going to have a home stream set up ready when I can afford it. And then we'll go from there. But I finally, the saga of my internet has finally come to a close, I hope, because Friday morning, they're like, we're sending a technician round to sort your internet because like Sky were providing my internet to somebody else for a month and I was paying for it. So like that broke my contract with Sky, which was nice because Sky could only provide me with like 30 meg. And I was like, ew. Like the box is right out in front of my house. I was like, 30 meg?
In this day and age.
30 meg. 30 meg. And for like a five or less, I could get like 100 meg somewhere else. I was like, yeah, I'm just leaving. See you later.
Did they like, try and keep
They were like, call us back. Yeah, not happening.
Because they do throw everything at you to keep you.
Yeah, well, I wish they would have, but they didn't. I was kind of sitting there going like, you know, six months of Now TV movies or something. No, fuck it. I'm going to go elsewhere.
Can we come around and give you a kiss? No, yeah. I don't want a kiss.
It'd just be another streaming service I don't watch and pay for anyway. So, what's the point?
That's it. I only realised on Sunday that I've got a BritBox subscription.
Yeah.
It's 6 months of free BritBox. That stuff, I haven't used it.
There needs to be an easier way to just get rid of all of that. Because like, there needs to be an app you can log into and it's like, hey, here's what you got. And you can just kill it. Because that would be so handy.
I just don't watch. I've never even thought of
amount of things I get for one thing to watch. Like I'll get a 7-day trial on Prime and like just to watch something ridiculous. And then 3 months later, it's still giving me recommendations. And I'm like, oh God, I'm not subscribed to that, am I? Oh God, $9.99 a month. Oh God.
Stop scrolling
down and there's more channels. And it's like, when the fuck did I get Discovery? What the fuck? And then you got to kind of just, chip away at them. But history were like, oh, you want to cancel? I was like, yeah. It's like, we'll give you another 4 months for £1 a month. I was like, yeah, and then I'll cancel. Great.
thanks. I'll watch it for a little longer.
I'll watch Skinwalker Ranch 5 more times and then we'll crack on.
There is too much, isn't there?
Yeah, right up until they started posting really harmful stuff, I loved Gaia because it was all just like, you know, conspiracy mental like aliens.
Gaia,
and then
David
Icke's
on there.
And then it became like population control, and then it very quickly descended into the rabble of bollocks that we all had to sit and listen to over the lockdown period, and that was like, oh, Gaia, you're actually really dangerous, so bye.
I have not seen Gaia. I watched Ordinary Things do a special on Gaia.
Yes, Ordinary Things is fantastic. I'm glad you watch Ordinary Things.
Big fan of it. I think he follows me on Twitter.
Really? Oh, my God, you lucky fucker.
We've never interacted, but I'm pretty sure.
Straight up, he's like my favorite. He's my favorite YouTuber right now.
He's ace.
I just watch all of his stuff like on a loop. The one that kind of
Oh, no, he doesn't anymore. He did briefly.
The dirty money laundry, like London. Mm. He explains like the London banking system and stuff. And it's just, he's so good.
He's so fucking funny. Yeah, have you seen him in, man.
Do you watch Internet Historian?
Yeah.
Incognito Mode? Do you follow that?
Yeah, so they get together quite a bit.
Have you seen Steve Bonnet?
Yes.
Yeah, that was how I was introduced to him.
That's amazing.
It was like, and I love pirates anyway, so I was like, this is literally the best.
It's like a 90-minute special on Steve Bonnet.
To play Steed.
Steve Bonnet, not Steve Bonnet. Stone Cold Steve Bonnet.
The gentleman pirate.
Steed the gentleman pirate who realized he couldn't afford to keep
Now a
his
hit
family.
Series by Taika Waititi. but it's, he didn't realize he couldn't afford to keep his family. He just kind of got bored and fucked off. Like,
I thought it was like the bank would stop lending him money, so he went, I'm just going to go be a pirate.
I think that weighed it up, but I think he spent a lot of time just staring out at the sea going, I could just leave all of this shit behind.
Do you think if you were around in that time, you would have considered being a pirate?
Oh, I would have went on a crew and died immediately. Yeah. there's something about like, because Steph hates big ships, but I really want at some point in my life, and this sounds insane, but I really just want to be in like the control area of a cargo ship going through a heinous storm. I want to feel a ship that big going up and down just gargantuan waves and feeling the weight of it just getting thrown around like nothing. Like I love the sea. So like the thought of just being on a massive boat like that getting thrown around with nothing that you can do to stop it.
Wow.
And it's just like at any point this whole ship could just roll. I don't know what it is. I just want it. I want to experience it.
Is it that sort
like
of...
imagine, have you ever seen them launch a ship when a ship just goes into the water and almost sideways? If you could just like accelerate me to a chair and then just kick it out to launch, I would just sit there gleefully just going back and forward like
this.
Is it
that feeling of like your fate being in the hands of the gods?
Yeah, kind of. It's just kind of, you know, whatever's going to happen here is going to happen. So yeah. GPS and, you know, the supreme overlord being, whatever it is, you know, take the wheel.
Are you a bit like that as a person, do you think? Where like you're like, just whatever's going to happen is going
to
happen.
To a degree. I think I believe in some element of fate, but at the same time, I don't think it's like set in stone. I think you can, you're the master of your own. Like I believe in self-determination, I think. Mm-mm. So like you, you kind of get out what you put in. And I've spent too much time putting out negative things. And now it's time to put out positive things. Just kind of take back control a little bit. But then if you do put me on a ship, just Jesus, take the wheel. Go for it.
We've got you on a metaphorical ship right now. A friendship that is piloting the cargo freight that is Monday Nitro in 1996.
Yes. Yeah.
Which kind of comes back to like what I was saying at the start. Like I was worried because like you were such a 90s Nitro kid.
Oh, no,
watching
like,
it week
I,
to week,
Tom,
I'm
I've
just
watched,
like...
I've watched it through once before. It just becomes laughably fun. That's where we're at now. We're at the laughably fun period of this is still going on. Fucking hell.
We're getting there. We are on the 15th of January 1996 for Nitro this week. The 20th episode of Nitro. The box at the UK box office, 7 is still number one.
Yeah, makes sense.
What's in the box?
It's
been around long enough. US box office is 12 Monkeys still. Terry Gilliam cut.
Yeah, fantastic.
Earth Song, Michael Jackson still top
of course
the UK charts. Mariah Carey, One Sweet Day, still top of the US charts.
When is Mariah going to leave?
She's never leaving.
Still top of the charts?
Yes.
Fox.
She lives there. This week, Detroit center Steve Yzerman scored his 500th career NHL goal as the Red Wings beat Colorado.
I genuinely thought you were going to say Detroit Velvet Smooth. It's like DBS from Trailer Park Boys there. It's like, what?
Sadly not, no. Bit of NHL news for you there. Also this week, David Bowie, Gladys Knight, Pink Floyd, Velvet Underground, and Tom Donahue join the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame.
Which is bullshit, by the way. The Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is bullshit.
Why is it bullshit?
It's a panel. it's not what it shows itself as. Like, I think that it should be more like a museum rather than this big kind of fucking Oscars level ceremony where you've got to wine and dine and petition to get in, where it's like, I mean, fuck, when Dolly Parton was like, I don't want to go in, and they insisted on it and then put her in anyway. It's like, she said she doesn't want to go in. Don't put her in. Like,
because she knew the system was a little bit nonsense.
But I don't know what her reasoning was, but it's been kind of like, if you just do some digging on it, there's a lot of like opinions of musicians out there on the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame, but I would love to see it, like, for sure. Like, it's still something I would love to see, but I just don't. It's kind of like the Oscars, right? Like, my favorite ever Oscars, what do you call it? Like, campaign, because you have to campaign if you're nominated. You've got to wine and dine. You've got to be all nice. You've got to give them reasons why you should win and
cupcakes
why you're special.
And hand jobs.
David Lynch just for, I think it was Inland Empire, he just hired a full cow, just a black and white cow, your bog standard cow, and had a big sign that just said, like, for your whatever the word was.
For your consideration.
For your consideration, Laura Dern, best actress. And it was just him sat in a director's chair smoking next to a cow. And he's already the best anyway, but that was like the moment where it was like, that's perfect. Because was it Monique for a performance in Precious? She won Best Supporting Actress, I think. She didn't campaign and her career suffered horribly and she was almost like blackballed after it.
Because she didn't wine and dine the people.
Because you don't kiss enough ass, I guess. And it's all this big rigged thing anyway. The Oscars are, you know, falling in popularity every year until Will Smith slapped Chris Rock, at which point, you know, that did big numbers for them. But I think that they kind of, it's almost like watching the fall of E3, but slower. Like, the Oscars just don't matter. Like, I used to stay up and watch them. I just don't care anymore.
When do you think that changed?
I don't know. I don't know if it's just a generational thing. I don't know if there's kids right now who, like, avidly watch the Oscars who will drop off. But it was sort of, I guess, maybe it was when, you know, all of our actors growing up that were like the big deals, the Brad Pitts, you know, of the world, the Johnny Depps and everything, that were in constant films that were, you know, getting awards and stuff. All those kind of major stars of the 90s. After sort of, you know, the early 2000s with the Oceans movies and everything, it just sort of, the interest wasn't there. And I don't know if it's just because there was just newer faces and I was like, But at the same time, I'm a big fan of film and I still put more stock in the Palme d'Or, even though it's usually a bit of a, you know, as most people would see it, a bit of a wanky film that'll win it. But the Palme d'Or, like, to me, is just...
You resonate more with the Palme d'Or than you do the
Oscars. But I think it's because the Palme d'Or's, like, again, it's another sort of... It's a committee that chooses it, but it's the whole festival aspect of it. I think if the Oscars was more like a big festival, then it would be awesome.
Yeah.
Like, if you had big premieres going on and everything.
That's a good shout,
Like, that would be a way to kind of freshen it up. But I don't know. I just don't... I don't know what it is. I don't really care about the Oscars anymore.
Like, it's just... Like I say, it's just a glad hand in, whereas the Palme
and it's all just like...
for the community to come together.
Yeah, a little bit. But it's the same with, like, the Berlinale. Like, any sort of film festival award, I always kind of take a little bit more of... Yeah, well, Palme d'Or can. So if you go to, like, any festival, anything that wins a big one at like an indie festival, it's always like, oh, that's going to be like a huge film, and there's a lot of buzz and a lot of excitement because of the festival feeling. And I'll tell you now, there's nothing like watching a film in a room with 2,000 people. It's surreal. It's genuinely surreal. Like, when I was lucky enough to go to Cannes, it's just, there's nothing like it. You just sat in a room with a concert's worth of people watching a film and applauding and cheering or booing, and watching a film get booed mercilessly. Oh, man.
Were you there when a film got booed?
Twice, yeah. So
what films got booed?
There was a film called Marguerite and Julienne, which was touted as, I think it was the film that Jean-Luc Godard never shot. And Jean-Luc Godard was a French new wave director. And they were kind of the first that would do swears. They were the first that would kind of break the rules about how you show men and women in bed. They were the first to kind of do dirty in-jokes and stuff. And they pushed boundaries, and it was all very like documentary style-esque, where, you know, they just went out with kit and shot with minimal crews and did as best as they could. But they went on to be like pioneering filmmakers, and Godard especially, or it might have been Truffaut. That was it. I think it was the film that Truffaut never shot. And it was just terrible. it was this big weird adventure about like incest, and the entire crowd was just like booing it mercilessly. And then we saw Gus Van Sant's Sea of Trees, which we were all really excited for. There was a lot of buzz for it. It like built and built and built, and then there's a point in the film, because the whole thing is like this guy travels to the Sea of Trees in Japan to take his own life, but as he's in the process of, you know, he's about to do it, he comes across somebody that needs help and doesn't want to be there anymore and needs to get out. So he's like, I'm going to help you get out, but they're lost. And so the whole premise is this, like, oh God, he's going to like find a meaning in life again. It's going to be incredible. And then about three quarters of the way through the film, it teases this really basic, cheesy ending, and everybody goes, imagine. And then it just does the really cheesy ending, and it just stopped. Everybody went quiet, and then just this one French bloke at the back just stood up and screamed, egotist! And then it just rained, just booze, people throwing the press papers and laughing at it and stuff. It was amazing. Jeez. It was genuinely amazing, because we're just sat in it just like, what? Wow. And then like everybody's booing, so you're like, yeah, boo!
Yeah, it's it, mob mentality, isn't it?
But at the same time, it was a fantastic film to that point, and then it was just like, ugh.
They just took a real shit ending.
Yeah, just a really shit easy way out on it. And it was like, oh, you could have been so much more if you just stuck with it. But
wow, yeah,
there's nothing quite like watching a film get booed.
That's amazing.
It's amazing.
Never had the pleasure.
And then the next morning, because it was like an 11 o'clock screening, I think. Maybe we got out about midnight, actually. But the next morning, first on the block at like 7:30 or 8 a.m. at the press junket, was Gus Van Sant, Matthew McConaughey, Ken Watanabe, the entire cast of Sea of Trees and the director. And then it was just like, right, the presses were often quite full for bigger names, but this place was rammed. It was just people waiting to just be like, so, yeah, you're Phil. And just, and it got to a point where Matthew McConaughey kind of had to step in and be like, look, can we stop? And let's just talk about
this instead.
He's
already dead.
Yeah, basically.
So what did they, can you remember what they said in reaction to people going, your film was shit?
I can't quite remember, but no. It's just sort of, you've got to give very general answers because you're playing with other people's money when you're making a film. So quite often you'll see a film at a festival. Like I saw a completely uncut version of Gaspar Noé's Love, which is a very, very explicit film featuring a lot of unsimulated sex. It's if you've ever seen a Gaspar Noé film, you know what he's like. But saw a version of that, and then that got cut down for release. So often, if a film doesn't go well, there'll be changes made to it before it goes to general release. Right. But I've never seen Sea of Trees again to know if there's been any changes.
Right, whether or not they did, whether they added a new ending.
Fun one, I sat and watched Love next to a woman from, I think it was like the Michigan Christian Press, and there were about three or four walkouts, because you do get walkouts when people are like, nah, this isn't like art, and they leave, and she sat like a trooper through the whole thing, and it was uncomfortable. It was like 9 a.m. on like a Wednesday, and it was just very, it was like watching a 2-hour porno.
Jeez.
And it was very uncomfortable, and she's just sat there just watching it and just writing up her notes, and I was like, bless you, genuinely bless you. I thought you would have walked out.
You could tell that she was struggling with
she sat and she diligently did her job as a film critic, and it was like, you know, you do see people leave, but she didn't, she stuck at
it. Like, no, my job is to critique the film. I'm gonna stay here, you know.
Plus, it's like probably the only chance it got to have been seen like publicly like that, uncut. So
there is something to be said for the brave people that what they're watching is really shit, they continue on.
I will stress, it wasn't a shit film. It was just very, very explicit.
When it's something that doesn't really...
The logo was... The poster was two mouths kissing. Like, big old full-on Frenchy tongue kissing. And then just the word love in a drippy white font, just to kind of set the tone there.
That would have kind of said everything it needed
to be said. I saw a lot of, let's say, omissions over that hour and a half, a lot.
they're seeing it through to the end. Yeah. Don't blame them. Don't blame them. A lot of emissions coming out of Nitro this week. From the writing desk of Nitro. We're going to talk about this week's episode of Nitro very shortly from January the 15th, 1996. Not those kind of emissions.
So. Yeah.
No, less of that. A bit more metaphorical emissions.
You mean I'm not going to get to see Hulk Hogan wank off? When's it going to happen, Tom? You promised me.
Well, Bischoff won't be wanking on about WWF this week. No. Did you notice that when you watched this episode? There was a glaring omission from Bischoff.
They just tried to talk about Miami as much as they could instead.
And talk about how good WCW is rather than how shite WWF is.
Obviously, they're building up to Clash, so there's a lot of talk about that.
The word is, according to Dave Meltzer, the Wrestling Observer from this week, is that Bischoff has made an about-face on Nitro in response to criticism made from the previous week of knocking the WWF in a way of getting over WCW. And rightfully so, because last week he was unbearable.
Yeah.
And he's reacting in the way, because they've been digging on WWF since the very beginning. Yeah. WWF started firing back with Billionaire Ted, and then Bischoff has gone, well, this shit, and we're great in this.
Yeah, he's the guy with he's the meme with the guy with the stick and the bike.
Yes.
And he's like, why would you do this? Like, it's, you know, he's fully guilty of it. And to be honest, it gets pathetic, man. It gets really pathetic. It just continues the more it comes up and the more it happens. It's like, why are you talking about them? If they're so insignificant, don't bring them up.
And I think he's probably had a little word with somebody and he's probably been told, look, okay, you were giving it them. They've given it back. Now move on.
Let's move on.
It doesn't go tit for tat for tit.
Yeah.
It's tit for tat. And then there you go. You've done it.
I don't know where we are with Billionaire Ted yet, whether that's concluded.
We've got a couple more weeks of Billionaire Ted yet.
Oh, he's going to be biting his tongue so
barely
hard.
Barely getting into it. At this point, I think maybe we've had our second or third Billionaire Ted skit.
Oh.
And there's plenty. We haven't even got to Larry Flynn Live.
I was
going to
say, has Ted done his press conference yet?
I think that's next week.
Right, yeah. The press conference is the one that changes attitudes a little bit toward it, because it's all a bit laughable for WCW and Ted at the minute. Mm. And then that's the one that kind of goes just a tad too far.
Yes, it does.
And then from there, it kind of descends to Vince eventually forcing it onto a pre-show to get around a TV network telling him off.
Yeah, that's exactly what they do with, which you'll hear more about on the Classic Raw review on Monday. Yeah. We'll talk more about it there. But Bischoff, less mudslinging from him this week. A new WCW remit has come into play this week.
Okay.
The Observer says, all the wrestlers now have to leave their championships with company officials after television tapings. Why do you think that is, Sam?
Who lost the fucking belt?
Nobody lost the belt. This is because they had Medusa dump the WWF women's title on the screen.
This is a little bit late.
They're terrified that someone's going to go do that on another show.
It's a bit late. You'd bring that edict in straight away.
Maybe they did, but maybe Dave only just caught
it. Oh, my God. I mean, it makes sense, but at the same time, you know, you want your champion to have a belt.
Yeah.
But, you know, it's...
They just bring them all to telly. And
when you start doing things like that, you've got to expect something back in return. So you're going to, maybe want to lock that off and keep those belts in a flight case so they can't get lost.
I think so. Because it's interesting how all the wrestlers carry the titles with them everywhere now.
I think it's an important thing. But now we're at a point where the replicas are so good that, I don't know if we even still have. Because the crack used to be with WWE that there were TV belts and there were road belts. And so you turn up to TV and that's the one with all the actual gems in it, like the actual stones, and it looks so glittery and everything. And then, they go backstage, they swap it for the one in their case, and that's the one they take out on the road with them. And that's just, like a road belt
that
goes to house shows. And if you lose that one, it sucks because it's still a few grand or whatever. It's not quite a replica level. It's a little bit better, but it sucks, but you've not lost the actual belt.
Yeah.
So but until WWE get rid of the Velcro...
Oh, the Velcro does annoy me, especially when
it's like I've seen so many people talk about it. So I know it's easier to take on and take.
I know we
off
get the logistics of it,
on, but it just looks so childish.
It's shit.
It's shit. It is. It looks like dog shit. It's like the press buttons, man. There's press buttons.
Buttons are fine.
There's not. They're annoying. Like especially when you get a new belt, press buttons can be really hard to you've got to properly and thumb them on. But it's.
The thing I seem to recall is, I'm pretty sure it was an episode of NXT UK where it was during the no crowd era.
Yeah.
And it was so quiet, you could hear...
It just sounds like crap. It's like somebody coming to a bar and opening a Velcro wallet. It's nah. What are you doing?
I don't trust anybody with a Velcro wallet.
One thing I did hear last night, it was surreal. There was some kid who clearly just turned 18. I was at the pub with my mate. And this kid had clearly just turned 18.
Two alcoholic
and he was there
drinks,
with his mates.
Please.
And he literally walked up to the bar ahead of me and he went, can I just get a pint of beer, please? And the guy just looked at him there's 14 taps. And he's like, just a beer? It's like, yeah, any beer, yeah. Carlin? And the kid went, oh, yeah, Carlin. And I was like, oh, you poor bastard. Starting you off way wrong here,
There's a multiverse rip there where multiple
you're at Leeds Festival
wrong.
And it's the only cold thing, go for it. But Jesus Christ, oh, no,
bless
not
him,
Carlin.
18. So, but he had his eyes ready
and
everything.
There was Heineken sat there, man. There was Heineken.
You should have gone up to him and gone.
Pale, I wasn't in any position. He was having the time of his life.
Can I have a beer, please?
He was so excited, bless him. It was just like him and his mates clearly on their first like pub trip. And it was just like, yeah.
One of my
pulled out his ID and everything.
God love him. I always remember my mate, Dr. Sam, who was the cleverest one of all of us. So this story's funny. We went for a beer's probably 19, maybe. Mm. And one day I went to our local and he went, I'm going to try a bitter. I'm like, good for you.
Yeah.
And he ordered a pint of bitter and he drank a bit of it. And no lie, he took a sip, went, it's quite bitter. That's why it's called bitter. Like, the clue's in the name.
Yeah, I like a good bitter.
I'll have a pint of fucking disgusting, please.
Like a good bitter. I'm all about, whenever I walk in anywhere now and I see Camden, like Camden Pale is just my
go.
Yeah, I love that. But it's more the glasses. I just like the Camden glasses. Those big fat, they look just nice big squat pint glasses. They're lush. But
them or the ones with the handle on? The old
old like bubble yeah. Like the Begbie pint. My favorite drink, nothing can touch it though, like nothing comes close to Wylam Jakehead. Wylam Jakehead is the greatest alcoholic tipple ever invented.
Nice.
I will happily drink that and that only, because you only need like three and you are gone. So like if it was like you can only drink one thing for the rest of it, Jakehead. Just give me Jakehead. Keep them coming.
Just keep them
it's
coming.
It's deceivingly light for how strong it is. It's brutal if you haven't had a good tea. It is bad.
Oh God, yeah. If you're getting
if you're ever
drinking
unfortunate
game.
Enough to be at the Clooney with me, it turns into just like, oh, just have another Jakehead. Just have another Jakehead.
If you're going for a drink with Sam, have a good tea beforehand.
Yeah.
Because it gets a bit IPA.
I'm working on it.
I tend to, there's a lovely little IPA place that's just opened up around the corner from us.
Yeah.
And it's like, it's good to, you know, if you go for one before tea, just make sure it's like one, maybe two.
Yeah.
Because the night gets
squished. I like that out there, somebody's going to be like, fucking IPAs, fucking beer wankers. My biggest shame, and I hate it, it's not really my biggest shame, but the biggest shame, it was that and Glug in town closed down.
Gone, isn't it?
Like, they had such rotten luck with. Like their landlord, but they finally moved out of the Granger Market because like they weren't allowed to be open on certain days. I think like Sundays the market doesn't open or whatever. And they had like the best beer selection. They had the best ingredients. It was always awesome. And then they moved out to like the front of like the Granger Market. And then their landlord, I remember like reading the little note they left on the door. It was like they just jacked the rent up like to ridiculous levels and kind of drove them out. And it's like that was the best beer shop this side of Rehills. Now I've got to go all the way over to Jesmond if I want something fancy. It's just, or if I've got to get, you know, Father's Day presents or whatever.
There's a lot of shops doing that, isn't there? Where they just jack up the rent so much that people can't afford it.
Well, it's because I guess the real estate's worth so much to them that if they can get a big brand in that'll pay it, they'll just do it. And it's just unscrupulous and awful.
Unscrupulous
and,
is the word.
Landlords. Bastards.
Tell you who I'd sit on a landlord to sort them out.
Who?
Dan Severn.
Dan Severn.
Dan Severn, who was at the WCW offices just a few days before this episode of Nitro. Offered no specific role or concrete amount of money, but WCW are interested in bringing in
the
Beast.
I'm sure they are, but they're going to need a little bit more than just, Dan, do you want to come in? It's going to have to be, Dan, do you want to come in for X amount of money for X dates? But Dan Severn's a pretty... He's a pretty straightforward guy, it seems.
Yeah, he's
the type of
guy
you just don't mess around. You just kind of go, well, we really want you for this angle, and we'll do this over this many weeks, and then if you want to come back, we can work something out. But if not, then grand.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They're working, and I think they want to work something out with our grey-shirted wonder that is the Beast, Dan Severn.
Yeah, and what a mustache.
He's got a hell of a mustache.
What a mustache.
He's amazing. He's, you know, Magnum TA and him, best mustaches in wrestling.
Yeah.
I'm sorry, nobody else counts. Don't even at me. Should we end before we get into the episode of Nitro? Should we end on a bit of Inoki news?
Yeah, go on.
We love a bit of Inoki news. Antonio Inoki held a press conference on the 11th of January in LA. changed the date of his planned multi-promotional show to the 18th of May. No site announced, but the LA Sports Arena and even the Coliseum are potential sites. The press conference was an hour and 40, mainly of the conference mainly contained Inoki showing tapes of Inoki.
Well, yeah. Look, great. How else are you going to know how awesome he is? How else are you going to know?
I know, but I love the fact that it's like, you ever, hi, I'm Inoki.
You ever seen the picture of Hulk Hogan's wedding where you've got like Inoki and Mrs. Inoki, you've got Vince and Linda, you've just got like a who's who of wrestling couples. But Inoki's just kind of sat on his own, just tall as, and that Vince is just like a row in front of him. And it's like just really weird. I want to know what sort of conversations were going on that day.
That would have been a weird old day. The only media covering the event was Japanese and Spanish language. Inoki said that it would be, he'd be inviting EMLL, AAA, yep, All Japan, New Japan, WWF, and WCW to participate. Said this wasn't a political deal. There'd be no interpromotional matches. They'd just bring people to have matches on the show.
Yeah, like an exhibition.
Yeah. Inoki didn't announce any of the matches or his opponent, although Inoki had approached Vader about headlining the show against him.
Which?
Inoki versus Vader.
I think they have a really famous match in 96, don't they? Inoki and Vader?
I believe so. It might even be on this show. Antonio Pena, KGB, and Jesse Hernandez were also there as well. Pena indicated that the AAA match on the show would be an 8-man barbed wire match.
Of course it would, Pena, you madman.
And apparently,
I just love that you said EMLL. I often forget it was EMLL.
Yeah, like, before CMLL.
Yeah.
But I love the fact that from that announcement of being an 8-man barbed wire match, the next thing they announced at the press conference was, we've been sponsored by Nintendo and Toys R Us.
Not for long.
There's a magical place with barbed wire there. Blood in the millions, all under one roof.
Somebody just dressed up, Inoki dressed up as Jeffrey the entire time. He's certainly tall enough to make it work.
Jeffrey's going to get stretched by Inoki. I'm intrigued to see how this pans out. I think this show does happen. There is a show that happens, but not in the, sadly, without like the interpromotional involvement that we're hoping.
Yeah.
But something does happen.
Well, you know, we I don't know if it's happened yet. There's like there are World Wrestling Peace Summits, I believe they're called, and you know there are multi promotional matches on certain cards where it is kind of like a nice everybody's coming together. It's happened again over the years. I think after the earthquake in Japan, the tsunami and earthquake in Japan, there was like a big multi promotional show which was like all about raising money and funds and stuff. And it's just nice whenever the companies kind of put aside anything that may be going on between them in the past and they all just kind of get on one page.
They all get together and just...
That's why I've been enjoying New Japan's 50th. Like, it's, yeah.
It's, you're seeing, like, people coming together and just going, ah, it's only wrestling. Let's hang out together.
Yeah.
It's nice to see. Anyway, to Nitro, January the 15th. We are in Miami, Florida. Bischoff, Mongo, and Heenan are ringside. We are stuck in a never-ending hellscape.
Yeah.
The WCW World title is on the line in our main event. Ric Flair will face Sting in a match with lots of history.
They do.
Yeah. Hogan will face a member of the Dungeon of Doom tonight as well.
Hey.
Plus, we'll see the Taskmaster and Hugh Morris face Arn Anderson and Brian Pillman. Plus, Randy Savage faces Lex Luger again. We are stuck in a never-ending hellscape.
Yeah.
And in fact, Savage and Luger gets us started.
Yeah, I just wrote here, Lex Luger versus Macho Man. To kick off your show, Lex Luger versus Randy Savage. Are you on meth? What are they thinking?
What was wrestling thinking?
What happened to the old car crash mentality?
Well, they've changed their minds. They don't want a car crash this
time. Well, they have a car crash. They have a fucking massive car crash, but not the type of one they want.
It's two golf buggies colliding instead.
It's just a gentle shunt.
We're going to start with a muffled gentle shunt.
A muffled exchange of details.
Heenan informs us that Jimmy Hart isn't out with Lex Luger tonight because he's having a backdoors meeting with Ric Flair and will accompany him to ringside tonight.
For fuck's sake.
What? This is actually a plot point that plays into later. Very subtly.
Yeah, you could say that. You could definitely say that if you want to jump through the 9 or 10 hoops to get there.
Do my best to.
Yeah.
Savage goes for Luger before the bell starts. Luger takes a clumsy powder out of the ring, but then Luger, the clever man, throws a chair into the ring, which Savage grabs, and this leaves him open to a Luger sucker punch.
I enjoy that Luger then poses and he shouts, "Look at this!" And I thought he actually said, "Luger this." And then I was like, how good would it have been if they just made that part of his gimmick?
If they made Luger a verb.
Yeah.
Like Google and Argos.
Or if he just, every time he went to say, "Look at," he said, "Luger."
Luger me.
And they just forced him to do it. It'd be great.
I'm going to go and Luger over my contract. Luger's strategy is basically not to let Savage in the ring to start the match.
Savage has still got a taped up arm, of course, that definitely wasn't injured.
He's still
definitely not injured.
His arm is still taped.
He's fine.
We're stuck in a never-ending hellscape.
No, Dave was wrong. He's grand.
Poor
just
Savage.
Just don't let him fall on it. Don't stretch it. Don't touch it.
They're keeping Savage working just so they don't prove Dave wrong.
Yeah. Wrong. At what point does it become a completely futile effort? Because I think it's week one.
Let Savage have a
week. I think it's just bringing it up anyway.
Yeah. Bless him. Anyway, Savage decides to drag Luger out of the ring and they have a brawl around it instead. Savage finally gets into the ring, lays an axe handle on Luger for a two. They go back and forth from here with a rather punchy, kicky affair. Savage goes for an elbow, but Luger moves out of the way. Wide open for a torture rack. Savage's arm drops three times and Luger wins.
Yeah, and then Luger refuses to release the torture rack initially before slamming him down.
Yeah.
So Luger really trying to get, commentary selling like he's really trying to get every last bit of energy out of Savage.
This threw me, and I was thinking like, why is this? And I realized why. It was a clean finish. I was like, oh.
It has been about five straight months so far of just
bollocks.
Dirty finishes and bollocks.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So I was like, oh, that's a nice surprise.
This is odd.
But Luger,
what is this feeling?
But Luger going over Savage here, I don't know, is that, are we sort of writing Savage out of...
Savage is kind of, I don't know what it is, like he's losing his luster by the second ever since the Hulk Hogan situation. And it's sad because, you know, it's Macho Man Randy Savage. And yeah, he probably needs some time away because... Jesus, that arm. But you've still got to make Luger look strong. That's the thing. Like, we all kind of laugh and joke about Luger being a bit shit because, you know, look at it. But, you know, he still has to be a credible threat. Look at the size of the guy. Like, he's still going to be a featured player, even though the storyline he's in right now is mired in shit. You still need him to be able to look like a credible threat at times.
Yeah.
You still need him to be able to pick up these shock victories. Just to remind you that he is Lex fucking Luger, and he is capable of this. Like, look at the size of him. So I think that... You know, it's just one of those things. Randy is working hurt. Commentary are, you know, going off about his arm still. So it's not like he's facing 100% Macho Man. And he managed to get a lucky roll out the way. It wasn't a definitive sort of he's just beating him down for 10 straight minutes and then put his foot on his chest.
Yeah.
It was a bit back and forth. Luger did have to resort to, you know, throwing things in and everything. But he still looks like a credible threat here.
Yeah, that's a good shout. That's a good shout. Later on. Will he Luger like a credible threat? We'll find out.
Hey, folks, I'm Mark Maron from the WTF Podcast, and this episode is brought to you by Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues. Your ally to help tackle your allergy symptoms this season. I love the change of seasons, but nobody loves pollen and all those other things floating in the air that make you sneeze during this nice weather. Kleenex Ultra Soft Tissues are hypoallergenic and allergist approved. So fight back against watery eyes and runny noses without worrying about irritating your skin. For this allergy season, grab Kleenex and face allergies head on.
Millions of people have lost weight with personalized plans from Noom. Like Evan, who can't stand salads and still lost 50 pounds.
Salads generally for most people are the easy button, right? For me, that wasn't an option. I never really was a salad guy. That's just not who I am. But Noom worked for me.
Get your personalized plan today at Noom.com. Real Noom user compensated to provide their story. In 4 weeks, the typical Noom user can expect to lose 1 to 2 pounds per week. Individual results may vary.
Normally, being a little extra might be a bit much, but not when it comes to healthcare. That's why United Healthcare's Health Protector Guard fixed indemnity insurance plans, underwritten by Golden Rule Insurance Company, supplement your primary plan so you manage out-of-pocket costs. Learn more at uh1.com.
Up next is the Dungeon of Doom versus the Horseman. Or is it?
No, it's just tunnel time.
Tunnel time. So the Taskmaster leads out Hugh Morris and Jimmy Hart along with the new US champion, the One Man Gang, who has not been referenced on this show in a long time.
No, and they just kind of talk about how he's got the belt.
Yeah.
And then they mention it and don't say anything else. And he just stands in the ring going, waving the belt around a bit.
He stands there just a couple of inches shorter than the Giants.
Yeah. So they stand him just a bit further across the ring from him. Just,
yeah.
You know, that extra bit of distance sideways that does nothing.
Giants out there, Zodiac's out there, and then bringing up the rear is Ric Flair, Arn Anderson, Chris Benoit, and Brian.
It's the bloody
Pillman.
Horse boys.
The bloody horse boys.
What are the horse boys doing here?
Yeah. This
oh, is it the most bullshit thing I've seen on TV in quite some time? I can't believe this segment. It was lost on me.
So Taskmaster drags Mean Gene to the ring because you can't talk without holding the conch.
Yeah, Mean Gene's been he's been relocated to like a Quetcher pop-up tent by the timekeeper this week. He's no longer on the ramp. But yeah, they drag him in the ring and then they proceed to just fucking cancel months of booking.
Yeah, you've nailed it.
Yep.
So Mean Gene says, lads, what the fuck? Arn
says,
what
are you doing here? And then Arn goes, it's a business meeting. And I know that we have all of our business meetings in front of 10,000 people.
Yes, we certainly
do. What the fuck?
What I love here is Arn says, like, he and Kevin
They're
Sullivan.
Allergic to backstage. I don't know what.
You're not allowed
why?
To do anything behind the
it's
scenes.
It's ridiculous.
Maybe they just haven't tied it up backstage.
You,
I know it's,
you could have
I know
least,
it's like when we have visitors in our house and the spare room's a mess. I just shut the spare room
the
door.
The spare room becomes the Monica cupboard. Yeah. It's more like you could have shown just something because they alluded to it. They alluded to, you know, Jimmy Hart was in there having a meeting with Flair and it's all this kind of backdoor dealings and there's something sus going on. But you think you would have just shown like a locker room door with a couple of people going into it and then like, whoa, what's
need.
Happening? Because the amount of times we just linger on the WCW logo or linger on a crowd shot, we just go back to Bischoff going, oh, action's coming up, don't miss it. You don't need that because he's doing that anyway at the start and end of every match. So you hear him go, there's more action coming up. And then you got an ad break and it comes back and he goes, there's more action coming up. And then it cuts to the ring for the match.
Well, there's a fear that if they show something backstage, people just tune out.
I don't know. I don't know what it is because, I mean, WWE had been doing backstage stuff since for ages.
Yeah, exactly.
Fucking over a decade at this point.
But Arn basically says here, he says he and Kevin Sullivan had a meeting at the Mines. And he says about how there's financial gain and respect in wrestling. And with the Dungeon of Doom, there's respect. But a match between these two, there's no financial gain. Everybody loses. Do you understand what I mean, Gene? And Gene goes, no. He explains the whole thing. He goes, do you get what we're saying, Mean Gene? And Mean Gene goes, no, don't really. And Mean Gene was all of us at that point.
It's bullshit. Like, you've built to this thing. You've got the Dungeon of Doom. You keep wheeling them out instead of just disbanding the fuckers and giving Sullivan, like, a small tag team to manage because give him that. Sullivan with a couple of people or just put him with the Giant. Just Sullivan and the Giant. Take everybody else out of the picture because they're all just sort of dead weight anyway in that stable. They'll probably be able to do more outside of it. But instead, they just choose to go, well, you know, we're both good teams, aren't we, Arn? And Arn goes, yeah, we're both good teams. Let's not fight. Let's just cancel all the booking we've built up to and shit on everything moving forward and take it sideways. Dungeon of Doom, who are you going to go fuck with next? Is it Sting? It's probably going to be Sting. Yeah. Oh, well, that is a surprise.
Yeah, so this is the horseman and the Dungeon of Doom coming to an agreement over their mutual enemies. And this is the Dungeon of Doom lending the horseman, the Giant. Ric Flair, the Giant for Clash of Champions.
It's Kevin Sullivan polishing the bollocks of Arn and Flair.
Yes, that's what this is.
Benoit doesn't get a single mention.
No.
But Pillman does.
Heenan gives him a nod on commentary, which we'll get to in a bit. Taskmaster puts over Flair, puts over Arn as the enforcer and the guardian. However, he has nothing nice to say about Pillman, referring to him as this punk, saying he's not horseman material. Arn Anderson steps in to defend Pillman and says, look, we're not afraid of you, but we do respect you. To which Pillman lights up going, do you hear that? Hear that? We're the horsemen! Don't fear anybody! And Arn just slaps the shit out of him.
Arn, you slap. It's super effective.
That bit I remember. That's the only bit from this. I think they used it in the Brian Pillman documentary.
You know, I agree completely. Like, Pillman is amazing in The Horseman, but he's not. Like, it's why this story works really well. Like, not this whole mire of fucking Dungeon of Doom and Horseman, but Horseman and Pillman.
Mm.
It's Pillman's repeatedly gone too far. And there is a level of honor to being a horseman, even though you are a lying, dirty, cheating, you know, you do anything underhanded to get what you need to get, there's still a level of respect there.
There's an honor.
There's still a level of honor in being a horseman. You don't just go like, you know, trying to paralyze your opponents. You don't just go in and run your mouth. There's a certain coolness that comes with it. And Pillman's just sort of, he's too explosive. And it's the problem that they've been building up and building up and building up. And so this is it starting to come to fruition. But watching Pillman's face change is just something magical.
It's great.
Because he goes from rabid, like, junkyard Rottweiler just barking and barking to just, like, staring a laser hole of death through Arn. And it's just like, how dare you? Like, oh!
Anderson shouts him down and then immediately assures Sullivan that these emotional outbursts won't happen again if they form a pact. And they do. Pillman looks irate. Benoit, and Heenan points this out, Chris Benoit has been staring at Anderson the whole time.
Yeah.
Really subtle little bit there that, again, suggests that, you know, maybe Benoit...
I love you, Arn!
Do you reckon it's either I love you or I don't trust you? Maybe there's a little divide between the young...
Well, how... It's one of those things where I don't get how anybody was able to join the Horsemen in later days, because how can you possibly trust the dirtiest player in the game and the best like point guard that the dirtiest player in the game has in Arn Anderson?
If they invited me to be in the Horsemen, I'd say no! I don't trust you! No, thank you. I'll pass.
Can you guarantee me at least a month of no attacks on me?
Yeah.
And then I'd run off to Mexico.
With this bit, not only do we see the Horsemen and the Dungeon Doom kind of form like a babysitter's club.
Yeah.
But we're sowing the seeds for an incredible bit of Brian Pillman business.
Yeah.
That will play out in about 2 weeks' time.
This is it. It's just going to build and build until we get there. But Pillman, man. Pillman.
So no Dungeon of Doom versus Horsemen.
No.
So we have a standby match.
We don't have to watch Hugh Morris. So
we have a standby match though, and it's Public Enemy versus American Males.
Hands in the fucking air, Tom.
Hands in the fucking air.
You can't see this if you're not on Patreon. Dun, 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 dun. Fucking Johnny Grunge and Rocco Rock.
First
they're
time
after
appearing.
Being snowed in, they're here. But the only thing is, they're facing off against the American Males, and it's sort of, we're at the point where, you know, it's like choosing which child you'd save in a fire. I don't want either of these teams to lose.
I don't want to save either of them.
I'm just going to quietly walk away from the burning building.
I'm going to quietly put my hands down.
Are you really?
On the table. You can keep them up if you want. Naughty by nature, violent by decision, says the jerseys worn by the Public Enemy. American Males come out. We cut to the crowd where there's a woman who looks like a 30-something mam taking her shawl off and exposing her shoulder to the delight of the American Males theme.
She's like, I will say,
like a little
just to jump ahead a bit, like in the show, when Hogan eventually makes his entrance later on in the show, there is this old bloke with clearly his son or grandson.
Yeah.
And he's like clutching him and he's got like the Hulk stuff on and he's loving it. The only thing he's missing is like a rifle. It will be the most American thing you've ever seen. It's just like, he's just sat there like lost in Hulkamania.
So
it's surreal. He's like shaking the child with energy.
Look, nuts. Kid, that's my boy, my hero, Hulk Hogan.
But yeah, American Males.
Yeah, and they dominate the Public Enemy.
They do, because when you see them coming, you better run for cover.
They wish they had.
Girls, you don't need a weekend lover.
That girl didn't need a weekend lover.
American Males.
That girl was not thinking about weekend lover when she showed off her shoulder, exposing her collarbone.
Well, listen here, collarbone exposer.
Mm.
If they want to talk to you, you better not listen. You might wind up in critical condition. The lyrics make no sense. It's who are they addressing?
You better not listen.
Because it's like, when you see him cover, you see him coming, you better run for cover.
Yeah.
Girls, you don't need a weekend lover, American Males.
Okay.
So that's already disturbing. And then the lyrics go on to say, if they want to talk to you, you better not listen. You might wind up in critical condition. Ha ha, American Males.
So if they go, excuse me, I have to ignore them.
Or is it like...
Will that not get them more angry?
Is this like talking to the boyfriends of girls they're trying to chat up in the bar? Is that what the lyrics are aimed at?
Oh.
All I was thinking through this is like, American Males are the blue chipper underdog babyface team. So the lyrics just don't fit.
They're the babyface blue chippers, but if they want to shag your missus, you just got to let them crack off.
Yeah, otherwise you'll end up in critical condition.
Please don't shag with missus.
But it got me thinking, though. Like, do you think that Buff Bagwell's like outlook on his later career would have been different, you know, toward the end of WCW, had they just kept him in that, because he's so good at this period anyway, with him being so young. He's so good at being that underdog, young, baby face. You know, you just want to kind of, he's so explosive in the ring. Same as Scotty Riggs. They're just both so explosive in the ring. Like, it's like, what would have happened if you just kind of put a bubble around Bagwell and kept him as that, you know, anti-NWO sort of WCW boy? Because I think it would have gone slightly different for him. I think he would have been maybe more in the title picture for sure. But ultimately, we would have lost, you know, all the beautiful heel buff, like unbearable buff.
Breaking his neck and not really.
Well, yeah. And then you've got that period. It's, yeah.
Mm. Well, what we get here is American Males just in top form here.
Yeah.
Drop kicking Public Enemy out of the ring. Small and ECW chant.
Well, yeah, commentary immediately. Like, it's a Philly street fight, guys. And it's like, get it? Philly. Yeah. You know who we're referencing, but we're not going to say their name because we don't want to give them any promotion. Philadelphia cheesesteak, anybody?
That's
Philly
it.
Street fight. It's a Philly street fight, people.
Philadelphia.
They're from ECW, everybody. Philadelphia.
This is 90-10 American Males. Philly barely getting a look in.
It's a little bit odd, though, isn't it? Because they Public Enemy are the heels in the match, yes, but they're not really heels. It's almost like we've got a weird, like, quasi-heel versus babyface team where they just flipped a coin. But obviously, with Public Enemy being the new team in, they've got to be the ones that are kind of the more aggressive.
But that's the thing. They weren't even aggressive during the match. No. They got battered.
But I mean, there's
the males.
There is kind of that commentary's trying to sell, you know, a bit like the difference in styles. And American Males were a lot more kind of nimble, whereas Public Enemy are hard hitting. And, you know, they're really hitting the ropes. They're really, when they are managing to get anything in, it's quite impactful. And then it leads to, I mean, it's not a great showing for them, but like it leads to a fantastic moment after the match.
It does.
Especially for this era of WCW.
It's basically the match ends after the males dominate. We see Rocker Rock punches Bagwell on the back of the head.
Yeah.
Grunge does a very slow roll up for the three. Mm-hmm. Post match, Rocco beats on Bagwell. They grab two tables, pile them on top of one another. And then Rocker Rock climbs up top and does a somersault senton through both tables onto Bagwell.
Yep. And that was commentary's really selling. Oh my God. And it's a huge moment because it's the first real slice of Philly that we've had, isn't it?
Oh no, we had Sabu.
We've had Sabu, but we've not quite had anything this ridiculous.
This certainly felt,
it's like, that's a major talking point. It's the best part of the show for me, that.
The difference with this is that they didn't cut away like they did with Sabu. Yeah. They actually stayed with this and focused on this. Yeah, the match was weird because they just got battered and looked like they fluked to win. But then at the end, they looked incredible with the table spot. Could you not have sort of given them a bit more in the match?
But I think you needed to get at least that across at the end just to be like, hey, like, this is what these guys do. So get ready. You're going to see a lot more of this. And then obviously soon we're going to see them coming out as they do with tables under their arms. And it's all just ready to go. So it's just a big shocking full stop on that debut. And it's like,
sentence.
Right, here we go.
After a plug for Clash of Champions, it is time for the WCW World title match. Not in the middle of the show. Yes.
Welcome to our main event. Hogan's wrestling Meng later. Don't worry. Fuck the big gold.
Fuck
the world title. It's completely, in this era,
Hogan Meng going on
not
last.
Going on last. Hogan Meng going on last. And we know that this is a period in which Hogan is, his agents are in his ears. He's starting to, you know, he's maybe not had quite as much success as he thought externally to the business, but there is a chance that he could maybe go off and, you know, do some more. And it's going to become like a weighing up situation for him, in which he's going to be presented with something he initially wants to do, then doesn't want to do. And then when he realizes that everybody wants to do it, he's like, oh, I'll take that.
Brother. It is the WWE World title match. It's Ric Flair defending against Sting.
Don't do Sting dirty like that.
Versus Sting!
Don't do Sting dirty like that either.
Sting.
This is 1996. He's the man called Sting.
He's the man called Sting.
That's it.
He did this.
That fucking theme is
that. He's quick like a cat and he's with a bird. But the bird. Girls, I just girls, love,
you
girls.
You can hear a Jimmy Hart theme a mile off, and I love it. I love it so much.
I read something about Jimmy Hart today.
Yeah.
That that they needed backing singers for Shawn Michaels' Sexy Boy.
Yeah.
He couldn't get a hold of anybody, so like he just had his voice replicated three times.
He's a really well-established musician. He had a chart.
But I didn't realize it was him doing the Sexy Boy.
Ah, I know that he...
I don't know whether it's him in the original version or in the current version.
Like, because he worked closely with... I was listening... It was an old Pritchard podcast I was listening to recently, like way back when. But he would work with Rick Derringer. When they bring him in to do themes, like Demolition's theme, which is one of the reasons it's not really out there very much, is Rick Derringer has a big old hold on that. It's why you can't get a copy of Real American really out there anywhere.
Derringer's got him.
Yeah, so there's that. But like he would also, just because of his musical background, he didn't really take any pay for it. He just liked doing it. Mm. So like he'd come up with just ideas and then they'd get pinged off to Jim Johnston or whoever else they were using at the time. Or if they were bringing in Derringer, like, well, this is kind of what we're going for. And Jimmy Hart would do all like the demos and he'd come up with some of the ideas for some of the really classic like 80s themes and stuff. So like it's, I was amazed at the fact he didn't really take anything for it. He just kind of did it as a case of... Well, it was more like if he didn't do it, they'd just pass it straight off anyway. So it was more like a labor of love thing for him. Like he just wanted to do it because he liked... Like he really has a deep passion for music as a person.
And a wrestling passion as well or just music? Oh,
I think both. I think, you know, he's somebody that has a... If you just listen to him talk, he seems to have a very deep passion for both industries. But I thought it was... weirdly noble, but kind of like you should have took some rights there if they'd let you, Jimmy.
Like one of the most iconic theme musics.
Because I mean, the whole WCW album's him.
Yeah,
if you, the one on Spotify. I'm pretty sure it's all him.
Like one of the, it seems a shame that he deserves a big house made of glass, and you know, $1 million. Scorpion Deathlock versus the Figure Four, baby. Says Mongo.
Yes. Before the match starts, fuck the match. Celebrities watch WCW.
They do.
Jim Belushi's going to be coming next week on Saturday or some shit.
He's going to come. You
want to see Jim Belushi? Anybody?
Yeah.
Jim Belushi?
This year, Jim Belushi starred as a voiceover in The Twisted Tales of Felix the Cat, Gargoyles, the Dumb and Dumber animated series, and just a month ago, he was in Jingle All the Way. So
he is fantastic in Twin Peaks: The Return.
Oh, God.
He plays like an unscrupulous casino owner. And he's so fucking funny. It's great.
Belushi's great. So I'm intrigued. So like, I mean, Bischoff goes to town talking about the celebs love WCW. Sylvester Stallone. When did Stallone pipe up?
He's friends with Hogan. He probably watches it.
Probably.
Yeah.
Do you watch your brother? Yeah. There you go. That'll do for us. George Foreman, Charles Barkley, Shaquille O'Neal, and as you say, for WCW Saturday Night next week, Jim Belushi.
And I think George Steinbrenner, they said as well.
Yeah, Heenan says George Steinbrenner. Just pops that bad boy in there as well. Flair throws Sting out of the ring to start. Sting immediately gets back in the ring, does the corner punches and a military press under Flair. These two just know what they're doing together.
Yeah, they're just like, you know, they've been doing it so long, they can just go for it.
They just know what they're always liquid wrestling. Oh, a light just flickered in here. That's quite exciting. It's the ghost of Jim Belushi. Sting goes for a standing splash. Flair gets his knees up Mother Brown. That turns the tide.
Was it Jim Belushi that died or John Belushi?
I don't know.
Was it John Belushi? I think it was John Belushi who died, wasn't it?
Oh, I'll have to check. Well, one of the Belushis is here. sorry for Jim Belushi if you are indeed still with us. I'm barely not. Belushi is still alive. Jim Belushi's still alive.
Yeah, I was going to say.
John Belushi. John Belushi
tragically
no longer with
passed
us.
Away very young.
We lost John Belushi at a very young age. From a Saturday Night Live guy.
Mm.
So these two just know what they're doing. Sting turns the tide when he gets thrown to the corner, comes flying out with a beauty of a clothesline.
Yep.
Double down. As this wears on, we get bollocks from Luger.
Well, not before we get Ric Flair's entire arse being shown to the opposing side to the hard cam,
of course.
Sting hopping up and hip thrusting, which I did not misspeak. That happened in that order. Flair gets his ass covered, and then Sting just stands on the spot as Flair's like kind of composing himself in the corner, just hip thrusting. It's very odd.
Having a lovely time as Flair's got his ass out. Not the only ass to make an appearance. Jimmy Hart is on the apron, trying to distract. Fluger, Flair, Sting.
He's trying to
distract Sting
or use the megaphone against Sting. So. Jimmy Hart's up. He's on the apron. Luger gets up on the apron alongside him. Luger's wrestling with Hart for the megaphone. And then Hart falls. They're both kind of looking. So as this is happening, Sting is going to be whipped into the corner. Or Sting has whipped Ric Flair into the corner. Sting's coming charging in for the corner splash. But Luger, I think it's supposed to be accidental. Luger takes the... He's fighting with Hart, grabs it. And as he, I think what's supposed to happen is, as he steps back off grabbing it, it's supposed to be the same moment Sting impacts with the splash. So it's like an accidental, Luger pulls it too hard and accidentally, because it goes up over his shoulder, just happens to hit Sting in the face.
Right.
But Luger's like a clear second and a half late and it just muddies it a bit because now it brings into question, okay, did Luger mean to do it?
Yeah.
Was it an accident? Luger's selling it like it's an accident, and then, you know, what happens next with Flair picking up the victory with a knocked out Sting, like a very easy...
Puts him in a figure four, yeah. Pulls the ropes.
Pulls the ropes, Sting's out, the referee calls it. And then Luger runs into the ring to get rid of Flair, starts attacking Flair, and then Luger shits himself, turns to the aisle a couple of times to like triple take, shits himself again, and then runs off because Hogan and Macho Man come out to help Sting get up from the ground.
And they charge out, don't
which
they?
There is, it does make sense. So like Macho Man and Hogan have been questioning Luger's loyalties and where they lie, and they kind of want to protect Sting from it.
Very subtle.
They want to protect Sting from it. And so when Luger sees them, he's like, oh, fuck this. I'm 2-on-1. I'm getting out of Dodge. But at the same time, it's sort of like, oh my God, like what the fuck?
Right, the issue we not have...
How long has this been running? Why hasn't this been resolved yet? We've had matches between everybody now. Can we not just draw a line under it?
No, we can't ever. Never draw a line under it. The thing with Luger is, like, there's no doubt in that, like, as a character, he's a good character. People gravitate to him. But there's a real, like, I don't think he gets / cares about the nuance of stuff. There's a disconnect.
Yeah.
And when you give him something like this that is a bit nuanced to do, he shits the bed with it.
Look, I think he cares. I do think he cares to that degree. Like, he doesn't want to fuck up his spot, because the thing is, if you fuck up your spot, you're going to have a hard time.
Up everyone.
You're going to have a hard time getting back to it. So I think he genuinely doesn't mean to fuck up, because why would you go in there unless you're wanting to get fired, meaning to fuck up? But I think it's just the, like, as hard as he thinks he's working to kind of rectify it, I don't think it's quite the level that it needs to be.
No.
Where the timing's off and things are just kind of flat and, you know, promos come out kind of stunted and it's just a bit...
You kind of see the cogs going in his head all the time.
Yeah.
Like, he's always overthinking it. I don't feel like I trust him.
I think that would plague me like hell if I was a wrestler. I'd be overthinking everything because I'd be like, do I need to be here? Do I need to be there? What's happening? I'm on the outside. Should the manager be attacking me? Should I be attacking the manager? Should I be screaming at somebody? Should I be playing with the crowd? And of course, you've got to run through all this stuff beforehand, which is, you know, how they plan matches. Big surprise. But, you know, they... But it's like, for me, I just second guess everything. So I'd just be like, what am I supposed to do now? Like, I know the beats of it, but fuck, what am I doing? Right, okay, where am I supposed to be placed? What am I doing? And I think he might just be a natural overthinker because he's somebody that actively, you know, he doesn't feel like he really wants to be, you know, a wrestler in the lifestyle. He just wants to be a wrestler job.
Yeah, he just wants the job of a wrestler. So he wants to have wrestling matches.
Yeah, and he's going to have, you know, all the fame and everything that comes with it and the possibility to break off and do whatever he wants, provided he's able to keep that spot. But he's already on a reduced salary. So maybe it's just a kind of, well, fuck it.
Yeah, that's it. And so therefore, don't give him these things that are nuanced.
But it's sort of like the company's just trying to throw him a bone, I guess. Just like, go on, get in there and do it.
This is how we do it now. Just try and do it the way that we want you to do it.
But it is convoluted. I mean, the fact you've got four people involved, it has to be specifically at this one moment of time. You are going to be looking at Jimmy Hart the entire time arguing while not looking at where Sting is. Of course, he keeps glancing to see what's going on and then immediately comes back, but he's too late. And then Hart's down and then it but, you know, they play it off quite well afterwards because Hogan and Macho are in the ring. They're like, well, it was Luger. Luger hit you with the megaphone and he did it on purpose. And it does, you know, it leads to more questions, which ultimately isn't a bad problem to have because, you know, you can keep Luger in this gray area and maybe, you know, if the crowd hate him enough after it, then fuck it, let's go in a new direction with it. But meh.
Sting, yeah. Sting didn't know that Luger
always
hit him.
Always try to see the best of it, but Christ.
Yeah, it's difficult. Hogan, yeah. Hogan and Savage are telling him, like, Luger hit you. You can't trust him. We've told you. I told you from day one you couldn't trust Luger, yeah. Says Savage, and you're dying by it, man. Sting is kind of coming round, and he goes, oh, Luger hit me? Oh, I'm going to go hear that from the horse's mouth myself.
And then Sting fucks off so that, you know, the real stars can have all the camera time. But my favorite part was when Hogan runs into the ring to save Sting. It really looks like, for a moment, he's toying with the idea of pinning him before realizing Sting isn't the champion. Because he kind of just gets on his knees next to him and he's just kind of like his hands here by the knee.
Can I pin him?
And it's just like, oh no, Flair's just left with the belt, hasn't he? Flair's left with the belt. Come on, up you come, Steve.
Hogan.
If I do this on TV, everybody's going to cheer and I'll be champion.
And that's what all everybody wants, don't they?
That and pasta. Lots of pasta. Please eat a pasta mania, everybody.
I've taken out a loan to do this business. Hogan and Savage, they talk briefly about Clash of the Champions, where it's going to be them two versus Giant and Flair. They haven't explicitly said this on the telly till tonight.
Yeah.
So we're sort of picking up as we go. And then Hogan says, you and I have got a problem. I'm like, oh, for fuck's sake. Are we still?
I think we do have a problem here, Hulk, and it was caused by you being a fucking twat when it came to, you know, the general handling of how Randy's situation went. When you got in there and you led to all these questioning, like, moments, and you'll see it many years down the line when you've got fucking Hogan going out there before the main event and he knows the main event's a cage match and he calls for the cage to be lowered. To the back-to-back cage matches, just so he can have the cage match. And it's like, that's kind of, that feels like a similar situation as to how we got into this mess with Randy in the first place.
Yeah.
And Randy's spotlight once again being taken from him. And it's just, yeah. I did enjoy Randy saying, my name's not Nick Bockwinkle. It's like, it's not Randy now.
Well done, Randy. You're very good. This is Hogan upset that Randy Savage, who has just lost to Lex Luger, who is injured, is getting a title match next week and not Hogan.
Because the belt's got his name on it, brother. That's my belt, brother.
Why is his name my belt. On the belt, brother?
My belt's that belt, brother. That's my belt. That belt's my belt, brother. I'm going to beat you for that belt.
Trousers are about to fall down,
you better
brother.
Win that belt and I'll beat you for it, brother, because that's my belt, brother. And then Hogan, the most important thing from this segment is that Hogan makes sure to leave the ring so that he can have his entrance.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Which is
rather than just fucking hanging around through the commercial break and cracking on. giving himself an extra few minutes in the ring.
Savage
there.
Leaves first, saying like, look, I deserve the title shot. I've earned it. We're not having this conversation now. I'm going. See ya.
Yeah.
To which Hogan gets upset and he shouts, we've got a date at the Clash. You're my friend. I don't know why it made me laugh. Come back. You don't leave on an argument. Like, don't go to bed on an argument
it's
with your
just
partner
he's
ever.
Just like, he's like, you're my friend. That's not going to work, Hulk.
You're my friend.
Everybody in the audience knows that he's not your fucking friend.
Don't be my friend.
Everybody in the audience knows that if you could throw him under a bus to get that belt, you would do it in a heartbeat.
You'd ask which bus, brother.
Yeah, which bus? Is it the X9? That's sitting outside right now.
Saturday night will feature Harlem Heat versus Sting and Luger. Yay. Yeah. And Jim Belushi. Hey, yay. Maybe he'll team with Sting. Main event o'clock, and that's right. Meng is out.
Oh, now, come on, Tom. It's not Meng. It's Spider-Meng. You've seen his entrance,
just whenever it's Spider-Kang.
Yeah. Have you seen the eyes that don't line up? Because it's supposed to be like an executioner's hood, but it just looks like Spider-Man. It just looks like Spider-Man eyes.
It's a strange look. If you watch this through and miss this, you'll be forgiven.
Yeah.
Because I had to rewind it just to see exactly what happened here. Because you see Meng led up by the Taskmaster, and they both start beating up this guy on the floor.
Right.
And they don't reference it on commentary. I was like, hey, what happened?
Invader?
No. Cameraman. Because there's a guy taking pictures by the ringside.
Yeah.
And I think what happens is Taskmaster rushes him and pushes him over. Because there's like the guys on the floor and then there's just like this nice quality camera on the ring apron. So I don't know whether like he falls over and whether Taskmaster makes it out like, oh, I pushed him.
Yeah.
Or whether Taskmaster just decides to push a cameraman.
Well, I think this happened a couple of times in WCPW, but it's always like usually pre-agreed. But it's a good thing for like a heel team. It's just a little kind of, fuck you, cameraman. Yeah. And everybody's like, what are you doing that to him for? He's not hurt anybody. Like,
but they didn't acknowledge it on commentary. They were too busy putting over Hogan.
Too busy gassing. But that's the thing. They've got to talk about Hogan for a prerequisite amount of time. So yes. Sullivan just timed it wrong.
How dare you attack him,
all on Sullivan.
Well.
All on Sullivan.
Out comes Hogan for the main event. He gets the double entrance like we all love.
Yeah, of course.
He's American.
But here's the thing for our main event with Hogan versus Spider-Meng. Meng batters Hogan.
Yeah, he's really laying
all
it in
match,
there, isn't he?
All match
really
long.
Laying it in.
It's chokes and chops.
It's a match long Hogan comeback.
Yeah.
Literally, they start from the dead spot where Hogan is like, he's obliterated. He's out of ideas and he's not quite got the juice of Hulkamania running through his veins yet. So you start kind of there. Meng has just beaten the shit out of him and it's great. It is great.
Taskmaster gets a bit in there as well.
Yeah, whenever he can, he's just like judo chopping him on the outside or tripping him, doing whatever he can. But yeah, Meng just laying it in, makes Meng look like $1 million here, just kind of taking it, not taking any bollocks back, just going for it, laying it in. But then, of course, there comes the moment where Hogan's down on both knees, Meng's looking at him, and he goes to strike him, and Hogan just starts doing the shake, and he starts looking around. And then from that point onwards, it's a five-minute Hogan comeback.
Oh, but what we get is, as well, we get Hogan fighting. We get Hogan sort of laying some fists in the corner on Meng. The ref splits them up, and in the ensuing chaos, Meng gets the spike.
Oh, yeah, yeah,
spike!
Yeah.
And spikes Hogan. Cover, two count, then the Hulk up begins. Like
I didn't realize the spike was used that early.
Really early on, yeah. Hogan takes the spike.
Because the spike's involved in the finish.
Yes.
Where we've got, like, it's Sullivan up on the apron. Sullivan going to hand the spike to Meng again, I guess. And Meng goes to grab it. Hogan gets it, though. Referee's kind of lost in this mire of, get down, Kevin, what are you doing?
Get down, Kevin.
And then Hogan uses the spike on Meng, spikes him in the face, and then spikes him in the knob when he hides the spike in his trunks. And then, which was smart, you know, at least he didn't just throw the spike down. He immediately covers his hand after using it, just uses the thumb end of it, bang, and then in the trunks. And it was like, okay, that was nice.
Yeah.
That was nice.
Cheeky Hogan.
But yeah, it just kind of... Yeah, it's just sort of expected finish. Meng wasn't going to beat Hogan at this point.
But Hogan used the spike to beat Meng.
He did, but yeah, at this point, it's more... We're still in that era where if a heel wants to use a weapon and it gets used against them, then it's just desserts.
Yeah.
And it doesn't matter if it's a face doing it. You'd have the most over baby face in the world. If a heel introduces a weapon and it gets used against them, it's like a life lesson, isn't it? It's like, well, don't fucking bring a weapon to the ring. Don't do that because this is what happens. You've deserved that. So I think it's more Hogan teaching them a lesson. Mm. And it's more like a, you know, Hogan can think on all these fronts, including using a weapon when he needs to.
He's so clever.
Because otherwise they would have used it on him. So it makes sense, but yeah.
I enjoy Savage, who kind of helped Hogan get the win, runs into the ring, doesn't like go and like thank Hogan or embrace Hogan, runs straight to the top rope and starts hot-dogging and grandstanding. I'm here, man!
Because Hogan, well, he may as well, because that's what Hogan does every time he fucking wins.
I think so. That's fair. That's tit for tat.
Yeah, that's some real shit. Macho runs down, obviously, as Sullivan's got the spike, and this is part of the confusion while the referee's distracted, is Savage pulls Sullivan down off the thing, and Hogan gets the spike at that point, and then ref's distracted, uses it, sticks it in his dick, and then goes.
And that is how the show ends. Next week, it is Macho Man versus Ric Flair for the WCW title.
Pepe's having a nap.
Pepe's having a little
12 out of 10 Pepe's.
I love seeing Pepe on a little slip. Jim Belushi's on Saturday night next week. Look forward to that.
Bye-bye. We didn't run out of time this week. I feel like we haven't nitroed.
We haven't nitroed. Yeah, they actually got it all in the allotted time. Yeah,
it's like they got the fuse got all the way down to the box and somebody just went...
Thank God they did. We are in a never-ending hellscape.
Yup.
Nitro.
Come back next month for the same six matches.
Are you in the same boat as I am with that one?
Yeah,
strapped to the chair.
You've got to just fight through it. You got to fight through it because we've got the good Pillman stuff coming.
Mm-hmm.
We've got the slow build to the summer, and you know the big question of who is the third man. So
we got all that to come, but continue to wade through the tunnel with us a little while longer. Anything coming up you want to plug that you can talk about? Nice to see you on the podcast last week.
Yeah, it was nice.
Nice little surprise.
Fun being on the podcast.
Yeah.
But yeah, no.
Snake bit roster last week.
You what?
It was a snake bit roster last week, wasn't it?
Yeah, it was.
We were down loads of people in general. So it was nice. It's a nice excuse to see you and Fraser.
I thought you said a snake bit Ross. I was like, when? I don't remember that happened on the podcast.
During the show. No, we were like WWF in 2001 last week. It was hilarious.
Or AEW currently.
Or current current year AEW.
Yeah.
Everyone's just banging. But it was a nice excuse to see Sam Driver and Fraser make his podcast.
But yeah, I'm still just working on secret stuff, so can't really talk about it. I'll be on stream tonight. By the time you hear this, I'm probably already live. twitch.tv/cultholic. And I'll be playing Klonoa. Because it fucking drops tomorrow, and I cannot wait to get back into Dora Fantomil. It's just.
I remember Klonoa is one of the games I rented from Blockbuster for my PlayStation.
It's up there with Tombi. It's just a nice chunky
platformer.
Yeah, but I can go back and play the PS1 version all over again, because it's almost like stylistically blocky, and it just works.
Beautiful.
And
game.
It's like nice and dark in places. It's good.
Yeah, it is a bit extra.
For a bit of a Kirby clone, really. It is so to a degree. But not at the same time. But it plays a lot like, 3D Kirby did.
All right.
It does.
I'll let you off a little bit.
It does. It's a banging game.
Thank you. Twitch.tv/coldholic for Sam Driver playing Klonoa later. And until then, next time we are together, he is at the Sam Driver on Twitter. I'm at Tom Gamble on Twitter. Together we are
Tired of ads intruding into your favorite comedy podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Dive into a world of laughs by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/comedyadfree. That's amazon.com/comedyadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
For all the wrestling headlines in just 10 minutes, search Cultaholic Wrestling News on Apple, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts from.